Our text this morning, some words from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount in the sixth chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth or rust consumes and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. May God bless this reading and hearing of this holy word. Gene Peterson is a pastor, and through his many books, has also been a pastor to pastors. He shares this reflection from his own life, a reflection on the birth of a grandchild. A few years ago, on the seventh day of Christmas, I got in on my first birthing, my first-hand experience of this holy mystery. It came when my daughter-in-law invited me to be present at the birth of their third child. She knew how disappointed I was in never having been permitted to witness the birth of my own three children. But in the years when my wife was giving birth to our children, fathers were banished to the outer darkness. So what I had missed with my own children, by her generosity, I experienced with this grandchild. Nowhere I have ever been, and nothing I have ever done in God's creation rivals what I experienced in that birthing room. The setting was austere, antiseptic, and functional, but the life exploding out of the womb that night transformed the room into a place of revelation. I have climbed mountain peaks that gave me spectacular views of wave after wave of mountain ranges, but none of these breathtaking vistas was comparable to seeing that baby, Sadie Lynn, enter the world. I have heard the music, the most delicate and exquisite bird song, and some of the best musicians in the world, but no sounds rivaled hearing the cries of that baby. Does anyone ever get used to this? I was totally captured by the wonder of life, the miracle of life, the mystery and glory of life. The day after the birth, I was in the grocery store getting some vegetables for the family. There were several mothers shopping up and down the aisles with young children in tow, and many of the moms were snarling and snapping at their over-lively, curiosity-filled, energy-splattering kids. I wanted to grab the mothers and embrace them, to tell them, do you realize what you have done? You have given birth to a child, a miracle, a wonder, a glory. You are a Madonna. Fortunately, I restrained myself. It may not have had the same meaning for them as it did for me. He then shares this concluding reflection. I wake up each morning to a world I did not make. How did it get here? How did I get here? I open my eyes and wiggle my toes. A mockingbird takes off and improvises on themes set down by robins and wrens, and I marvel at the intricacies. The smell of frying bacon works its way into my nostrils, and I begin anticipating buttered toast and scrambled eggs and freshly brewed coffee. There's so much here, around, below, inside, outside. Why this? Why anything at all? Why not nothing at all? But after a while, I get used to it. I quit noticing. I get narrowed down into something small and constricted. Somewhere along the way, this expansion of awareness, this wide-eyed looking around, this untaught delight in what is here reverses itself. The world contracts, and I find I am reduced to a life of routine through which I just sleepwalk. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust consume, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus' words challenge me. Jean Peterson's words challenge me. Because too often I fear there's a significant disconnect between what I say I treasure, what I want to treasure, and what I actually treasure. I mean, I say I treasure family, friends, moments spent with loved ones, and yet how easily I allow those people and moments I say I treasure to be crowded out by other things, meetings, commitments, responsibilities, any number of demands on my time, even anger and impatience. Now, don't get me wrong, I believe in keeping commitments and fulfilling responsibilities, and yet, how often do I allow myself, my world, to get narrowed down and constricted? Well, Gene, I know you say you treasure this, but you know, from the way you live, it looks like what you treasure most is your calendar, your busy schedule. Just where is your heart, really? It's tough. Because really, busyness is kind of how our culture measures worth. You get a group of five ministers in a room, that enough is scary, but, you know, soon it sounds like a contest to prove who has the busiest, most out-of-control schedule. It's as if we need to convince ourselves and everyone else that we really are busy and important people. And yet, to return to Jean Peterson, there really is so much here all around us, color and shape and texture and sound, people who love us and hope to receive love from us. A marvelous creation to be enjoyed and cared for, so much to treasure. But how easily it's all reduced to a world we really do not touch and only vaguely sense. Perhaps that is why there are a lot of people out there today suggesting that the art of saying no just might be a valuable spiritual experience. No, I want to stay home tonight. No, I have enough work for now. No, I have all the possessions I can take care of. No, I think I'll sit here and enjoy the sunset. In this culture, it's hard to imagine anything more radical and countercultural than no. Just what do we treasure? I think of the erosion of the weekend. When we first moved to Western Pennsylvania, where I began my ministry, they had blue laws. I don't know if you've ever lived anywhere where they had those. retail stores, many restaurants were not allowed to be open on Sunday. Now, that was new to me, living as I did in the pagan West, where, I was used to seeing stores open on Sunday. But it was not long before even Western Pennsylvania gave in to the demands of commerce and culture, and stores began opening all over on Sunday. Many of the people in my church were horrified by this. But honestly, it's what I knew. I didn't give it much thought. But author, teacher Barbara Brown Taylor has an interesting take on this. Reflecting on the end of blue laws in her native Georgia, she writes, "Entertainment and shops of every kind were now open on Sundays. Merchants were no longer willing to stay closed in order to help churches stay open. People of faith were free to keep the Sabbath if they wanted to, but not because there was nothing else to do. From now on, they would have to find the strength to say no for their own reasons, from their own spiritual resources, no to things that would now be easily within their reach." Now, while this seismic change spelled loss for some, it spelled liberation for others. They welcomed the freedom to choose their own activities and set about making full use of their newfound Sunday freedom to work, shop, play, eat out, and haul freight to their heart's content. She concludes, "I guess I do not need to tell you how this went. Once merchants began opening on Sundays, they needed people to work on Sundays as well. While higher wage earners could say, 'No thanks, I'd rather play golf on Sunday,' lower wage earners had to choose between keeping the Sabbath and keeping their jobs. Either way, if people were going to work on Sundays, then it did not make much sense to say to kids not to play competitive sports on Sundays. And if the kids were going to play Sunday sports, then someone was going to have to drive them, which is going to make pulling together a Sunday meal even harder than it had been. And the incline in work time was matched by a steep decline in unpaid activities upon which societies depend. The care of the very old and the very young, civic duties, volunteer work, church work, support of the arts. Soon Hallmark had a new line of cards. 'Sorry, I can't be there to tuck you in,' said one. This is what happens when consumerism and gross domestic product become the foremost indicators of a nation's health and well-being. And before long, even God's creation becomes just another item to be used and consumed. Oh, let's use all the fossil fuel we can today. So what? We'll worry about the implications tomorrow, if at all. What do we as a nation treasure? Where is our heart to be found? It was Thomas Merton who said, "To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence." I think of Charlie Brown sitting in front of Lucy's psychiatric booth. "Trouble seems to follow me everywhere," he says. "No matter where I go, I can't seem to escape it." Lucy leans back, puts her feet up, and says, "What you need, Charlie Brown, is an unlisted life." I think I need to look into that one. Not a bad idea. He may not be alone in that. "'Tis a gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free. 'Tis the gift to come down where you ought to be. I know what I want to treasure. I know where I want my heart to be. So hard to get there. pastor shares this story. Johnny Bergman was a young man in my congregation. He and his wife were enthusiastic participants. But then the needs of worldly care choked their young faith. They had children, actually became rather wealthy, and their lives filled with boats and cars and house building and social engagements. They were in worship less and less frequently, and then not at all. After a two-year absence, on a bright winter Sunday, there was Johnny in church. I was surprised to see him. I said, "Johnny, what brought you to worship today?" I'm afraid I've done that to some of you sometimes. "What are you doing here?" Johnny said, "You know, I woke up this morning feeling so good, so blessed, so glad to be alive, that I just felt I had to say thank you. And this is the only place I could think of to say it adequately. I just wanted to say it to God." Maybe that's what I need. A lot of wonder-induced gratitude. Waking in the morning and noticing right away how good it feels to take in a good, deep breath. Opening my eyes and appreciating the light and color and beauty of another day. Remembering I am alive today. What a gift! Rather than just living my life without noticing. Washing dishes and reflecting on the many loved ones and friends who have eaten off those dishes as we sat around a table sharing laughter and, yes, even tears. Giving up my fear that I am not enough, that my life is not enough, that there is not enough time or money or appreciation or reward. And instead, just letting enough be enough. And maybe even, and this is the tough one, closing the almighty calendar and going off to a grandson's Little League game, or maybe to a trout stream, without taking along a truckload of shoulds and guilt. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It was Richard Rohr who spoke of falling upward. As we get older, developing a deeper passion and spiritual maturity. And the key to doing this, in his words, your concern is not so much to have what you love, but to love what you have. Right now, being captured by the wonder of life, the miracle of life, the mystery and glory of life. Now we're talking treasure.